Good evening. Before we begin, a disclaimer and a warning for tonight's episode. Tonight's broadcast may be unsuitable for children, adults, and living creatures.
Listener's discretion is advised.
I've been keeping my ear to the streets. The UK
worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Joey Stubbs. What's going on, Joey?
You know, for somebody who makes his living on radio, you have a hard time stringing together words. You all right?
I was trying to make a point. I'm using football as a soliloquy.
You really have a way with words.
Rat Boy didn't even want to call in last week since you weren't here, so.
And the very first person that was ever in the ring was an amateur, is Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman was not an NCAA champ.
Oh my God.
I am heartbroken. I don't know why you're laughing.
Albert, you're a freeloader.
It's buzzed around the world. Twitter blew up. Facebook blew up.
It's the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. What's going on, Jimmy?
Well, you never know. Telephone, telegraph, and tell the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, we're full of all kind of surprises.
This is a honky-tonk man, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time in the WWE, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
You know why you don't want me on your radio show? Because you know the ratings will go through the roof. You'd make a lot of money, and that way you keep me off. That way you will stay always broken.
VOC Nation Radio Network, this is Wrestling with History Worldwide on VOCNation.com, the voice of choice, Wrestling Marks. Eric, we're back here live on a Wednesday evening, and Eric, where in the world is the VOC? Today, I'm broadcasting from the lovely city of Denver, Colorado.
You're a world traveler now, Bruce. I don't know how you do that. That's not easy traveling like that, especially now with the family you got. I'm sure it's probably making it tough for you, huh?
Yeah, it's not the best situation in the world, but we get through it. And, you do what you have to do to pay the bills, right?
Right. Oh, you like what you do, too, so that helps.
Yeah. I think you take the good with the bad, and, it could be worse. I guess it could always be worse, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm learning. That I'm learning that power of positive thinking thing.
Yeah, so you just got to get through it, Eric. But this is the fourth or the fifth week in a row that I've done this show from a different city. So here I am in Denver in a different time zone. And today, Eric, I've been waiting for this for a couple weeks. It's exciting. We're going to talk about the best factions / stables of all time. So the best factions in wrestling history. I have some rankings that I can pull up for us to go through. We'll take some calls from the peeps out there. And Eric, you went out and you found us a very special guest that was part of a few different factions, didn't you?
I did. I'm really excited to have him join us. I think he was definitely a part of one of the best factions during one of the greatest times in wrestling history. So, I'm excited to get his opinions on the factions at that time, and wonder what he thinks about some of the groups that are around today.
Now you have to tell us, who is this mystery guest?
Oh, okay. I'll tell. I thought you. Sure. D'Lo Brown.
I was leading you into a little, like a surprise.
Sorry.
Right? You thought I was leading you into a surprise? No, you're fine.
Yeah.
Say it again, because I was talking over you.
So we're going to have D'Lo Brown. Bruce, from the Nation of Domination, the birthplace of The Rock, really.
Yeah, absolutely. They were a great faction. And one of the things I was going to talk to D'Lo about today is I don't know if that faction would work in today's political climate. I'm not sure that any of those factions from WWE in the late 90s would work in today's political climate.
It's so funny that you say that, because that was a question that I had for him as well. I was thinking the same thing. That was I don't know if in today's world they could get away with a group like the Nation of Domination, or even the Los Boricuas or DOA, the Disciples of the Apocalypse. They might have been too stereotypical for today's more sensitive society.
Well, the worst one of all, Eric, circa, I think, 2002 or 2003, was the Mexicools. Remember that? They used to ride down to the ring on John Deere's.
Juan Deers.
Juan Deers, that's right. Never worked today.
Yeah.
Not that it was ever appropriate.
Yeah. Then it's funny that's you're right. They would never. There's just under no circumstances would they try and pull that off in today's political climate. Absolutely not.
Insane. Well, we're going to hear from the people as well. We always start out with at least a few people on the board, some of our regulars. So hang in there. We'll get to you. The number, if you want to get to the show, if you're listening live, is 657-83-1666. 657-383-1666. You can tweet at Bruce VOC. I'll monitor the live tweets during the show. Wrestling Marks, or Eric is at Wrestling Marks, and the network at VOC Nation, but we don't look at that during the live shows, at least not this one. And Eric, I was thinking about D'Lo Brown in preparation for today's show, and a lot of people don't realize mm-hmm. when D'Lo Brown's first ever appearance on WWF television was. Do you know when that was?
I have no idea. Please tell me.
Well, I'm gonna let you think about it. I'll let the people think about it
a little bit.
We'll take some calls ahead of D'Lo, at least one. You know who I'm going to first. We'll take some calls, and if anybody gets it before D'Lo comes on and we talk about it, I will send a fantastic prize.
I love when we have prizes, Bruce. Is it as good as the last one we gave away? Which I believe was $2.
$2, yeah. And I couldn't give it away because the person didn't get it right. I think it took too long or whatever. But I didn't send the $2. If I owe somebody $2, you'll have to call back in and get it. But no, it's a VOC Nation prize pack. I'm still determining what's in the prize pack, but we will give a VOC Nation prize pack. And Eric, so this show's almost 2 months old now, and we've had over 1,000 listeners cross VOC Nation Wrestling with History, which is kind of cool. We've been off the air, you and I, for several years, 5 years. The network went on, but we've been off the air together actually for like 7 or 8 years. So it's pretty cool that people are starting to find us again.
Yeah, that is fantastic. I mean, we have so much fun doing this, and it's really great to know that people are finding us and tuning in and enjoying the show. It makes me feel really good, man. It's good stuff.
So speaking of guests, so Eric, I think I talked to you off the air about this. I've been joking the last couple weeks, you know, now that Bruce Pritchard is the greatest podcast of all time, apparently, especially the greatest wrestling podcast of all time, 2-time podcast of the year, Something to Wrestle With. Wonderful show with him and Conrad Thompson, if you haven't checked it out. But I've been just joking around saying I'm the original Bruce because, you know, I was on the air before he was, at least in this fashion.
Right.
Well, Eric, I went out and got the original Pritchard to join us next week. Dr. Tom Pritchard, former WWE head trainer, will join us right here next week. So the original Bruce and the original Pritchard, together you get Bruce Pritchard, but it's not that guy.
That's great. Can't wait. That is good stuff. We're so good now. We're booking guests in advance and stuff like that. We're getting right back into things, man. This is the momentum continues to build for this show, man. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, the network stats are way up. I was talking to Brady Hicks, who from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, who is the general manager of VOC Nation now, and he said the web stats are way up. So overall, awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. So very exciting. Eric, let's sneak in a call before D'Lo. D'Lo should be joining us in the next 5 minutes or so. If D'Lo gets on the board before I get a chance to take a commercial, then we'll go right into D'Lo. We'll skip the first commercial break. How's that sound?
Great idea, man. Go for it.
All right, leading off, playing center field, coming from California or somewhere in the West Coast, it's Malcolm Wild. What's up, Malcolm? What's happening, man?
I'm going to take a guess on your question. Is it the Nation of Domination?
It is not the Nation of Domination.
Well, I just took a guess. And
no, it's a good guess, and that's what most people would probably think, Malcolm, but D'Lo Brown appeared on WWF television way before anybody else would think that he did.
Oh.
And I'm excited to tell people.
I was probably in Germany when it happened because I missed everything.
Is that World War II?
Well, but can I sneak something in here real quick, Bruce? A friend of mine passed away. He's one of the greatest Oakland Raider players ever. He was a hero when I was a kid. He was my best friend, not, you know, best friend like a player.
I thought I was your
best friend.
Friend
of a fan. His name was Cliff Branch, number 21, from Colorado University. The Raiders drafted him in 72, and he held the record for receiving yards and passer receptions, and I think touchdowns too as a receiver when he passed away. About a week ago. His birthday was August 1st. They say he passed on a couple of days after that, which would have been August 3rd. And I think that was Saturday, if I'm right.
We're sorry to hear that, Malcolm.
Or is that
very
man,
sorry to hear that?
To say if my calculations are correct.
Very sorry to hear that. You know, I'm even sorrier because I thought I was your best friend. Eric was your second best friend. Now we got a guy that just passed
friend.
Us both.
I just want you to know something.
Eric, how do you feel about that? We've been passed over.
You haven't. Bruce, I have friends. I call them my best friends. If I have a fan club someday as an actor, if I get really big, I don't want fans. I want friends. I just want friends around me. I mean, I'm going to see Bret Hart and Harry Smith, Davey Boy Smith's son, and Billy Gunn, badass Billy Gunn. And I just saw Billy Gunn at StarCast. I thought he was mad at me. He said, no, he wasn't mad at me. He was just having a bad day. You know, and I just, you know, Kirk White's my friend. Hawkeye Shane Cody's my friend. You know, all you guys are my friends. I mean, you know, I don't want to single out one friend. I call you guys my best friend, you know, because I want nothing but friends.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Malcolm, give me your favorite faction of all time. I got to keep you on track because, you know, we got D-Lo coming up,
God,
and I
there's so many,
can't keep
Bruce.
Waiting.
I guess it would be, it's a tie. It's a tie between the original faction in wrestling, the Four Horsemen, and in the 90s, Hollywood Hogan's NWO.
Okay, well, pick one. Pick one of those two as, and I'll give you your spot in the top 10.
I did call the WWE shop today, and I ordered a tank top shirt in black, and it's got yellow Hulkamania on front of it, and then I ordered a Rowdy Roddy Piper sweatshirt hoodie, and on the hood is tartan design. It's got Hot Rod on the front. And this real nice lady, Liz, set it up for me. So, you know, I just want a Hulk Hogan to know that he still talks. But, I mean, to be truthful, I have to go with the Four Horsemen. I mean, created more controversy over the years from 85 when they were first put together, you know, Ole Arn, Tully, and Ric Flair, you know, all – and they all had championships, and J.J. Dillon was the manager, and I met J.J. several times, even here at the Califelli Alley Club, you know, and I love the Horsemen.
Shocking.
I've seen Dean Malenko, I've seen Lex Luger, Barry Windham, you know, all these guys that have come and gone, even Double J, Jeff Jarrett, 96, I love.
Malcolm, I gotta put you back on hold, man. I appreciate it. I got D'Lo Brown coming on the line, so thank you. Great guest, Eric. The Four Horsemen, number 3 on the list in the top 10 for the best stables of all time.
That's according to our favorite ranker rating.
No, I'm not going to tell people the website until the end because if they're listening to the podcast, they'll skip right through. They'll see that it's not as suspenseful. But right now, I'm going to go to former WWE Impact and a VOC Nation friend, D'Lo Brown, in the VOC Nation Wrestling with History. What's up, D'Lo?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Oh, it's great. It's great to be here with you. I was giving a little bit of trivia, D-Lo. I was saying that a lot of people don't really know when your first ever WWF appearance was, because it wasn't when you joined the Nation. And I was listening to actually Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard a little bit ago. It was an old episode about Brian Pillman. And I found out that you were one of the stand-ins, the extras, during the Brian Pillman press conference, weren't you?
Yes, I've done a lot of stuff with WWE long before I was D'Lo Brown. So I've dropped Jerry Lawler off his throne. I've gotten beat up by Earthquake. Yokozuna squashed me once. So, yeah, I've been there a few times.
So that wasn't your first – what was your first appearance with WWE or WWF?
It would have been somewhere in, like, June of 94. It would have been
in Rochester, Pennsylvania. Wow. I bet you that nobody would even think to guess that it was that long before. I think 97 was when you joined the Nation, right? 97 or 98?
Yes. Yes, it was 97. So, yeah,
interesting.
It was several years before.
Interesting. Well, D'Lo, always great to talk to you. And we're talking about factions today. You were in two of them. Obviously, everybody knows the Nations. But you were also the very first mystery man in Aces and Eights. Tell me about the whole process building towards Aces and Eights, because nobody likes to talk about TNA these days. And that was when TNA was kind of hot. So tell me about how that idea was pitched to you and how you executed that plan and what it was like to be part of it.
Well, funny thing was, I was never supposed to be part of the group. With all the guys who were out there wearing masks, beating people up, I was just an extra body to go out there and make sure, you know, the beatdowns looked good. And then eventually I kept getting put out there more and more and more. Then they were like, well, we'll just move you into the role and put you on camera because, you know, we know you can handle the role. So just go out there and do it. And that's pretty much how it was thrown at me. It was just something that I was just an extra who was just going out there to make the beatdowns look good.
Wow. Isn't that crazy? Is that how TNA was run? Was it really just a week-to-week, hey, let's do this week kind of thing?
No, like Ace and Ace was a concept that was, you know, everyone was under hoods, so they really didn't know who was going to be the people under hoods. I was just an extra body just to help beat people up, you know, just to make the beatdowns look good. And I guess they had liked what they saw, and kept me out there, kept running me back out there, and then thought it'd be a good enough hit if I was, you know, revealed as being, you know, the vice president.
Did you ever think during your time at TNA, because there's a lot of, you know, buzz about AEW now and them potentially catching the WWE at some point in time, did you ever think during your run at TNA that they would catch up or draw some kind of competition towards WWE?
Yeah, there was a time there when we were really on a roll, you know, when, you know, you had Sting and Jeff Hardy and, you know, we were rolling and never was it trying to be competition with WWE, but it was just carving out our niche. And there was a point there where it had that feeling of something special could happen. So, yeah, we all definitely were trying our best to make, you know, TNA something special.
What do you think stopped TNA? What stopped the momentum that you guys had there? Was it backstage politics? Was it disorganization? What stopped the TNA ship from sailing the way that it was?
I mean, that's a 30-fold question that I wish I could answer because I don't even know the answer. I just know that it hit an iceberg and just fell off. And you know, luckily, it's in with better management now, and TNA became Impact, and now it's a much better place than it was before.
Yeah, and you're doing some work with Impact today, right? Is that true?
Yes, I'm a backstage producer and work with talent relations. So yeah, I'm very much in the office of Impact now.
And is there, what's the goal for Impact Wrestling as it stands today? Because I think a lot of people tend to, you know, all the buzz is AEW and WWE, Ring of Honor's out there, Evolve's getting press, and Impact has kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit, but they're starting to creep back up, and they're making their own niche again. I think they got away from the niche that they had when they started up. But what's the goal? What's the next step for Impact Wrestling? Is the next step to compete more like with a Ring of Honor, or is there some long-term goal to get into the AEW-WWE conversation?
I think the long-term goal for Impact is just to become as big of a property as we can, and draw as many fans as we can, and, you know, carve our niche out and own our little place in sports entertainment. So, I mean, I can definitely tell you that's the goal going forward, is to put more eyes on our product.
Excellent. Eric, I know we talked a little bit before the show about factions and specifically the Nation of Domination, and I know you had some points that you wanted to bring up with D'Lo, so I won't take that from you.
Oh, okay. Cool, man. Hey, D'Lo, how you doing, man? It's Eric.
What up, dog? How are you doing, bro?
I'm doing good. With the Nation of Domination, it was such a even for during the Attitude Era, I would say it was considered to be a controversial group as far as what it stood for, and the appearance, even, you know, with the militant style of it and everything like that. Do you think in today's climate a group like that could actually happen in the WWE or even in any wrestling promotion? Do you think today's political climate would allow for a group like that to exist?
I think not. I don't think today's culture would allow a group of militants like we were to exist and not be, you know, hit down or struck down by several, you know, different groups or you know, parents groups or whatever. I don't think it would have worked today. It was controversial then, and in today's PC climate, I don't think it would work today. I mean, I wish it could, because it would be amazing to see a new version of it, but I don't think it would fly today.
Because if you remember, actually, if you were watching, when they first started forming the New Day, it seemed like they were trying to take a not a militant, but definitely a political-styled group in the very beginning of the New Day, you know, kind of taking another stereotype and taking it into another direction, sort of. But it just seemed like they got scared with that, so... Is it more that they are afraid of the backlash, or is it you just don't think it would work, though? Like, is it?
I think the backlash would be so severe right now, it might not be worth the effort. As Eric Bischoff says, controversy breeds cash. So, to me, I would like to create it, because I just like to see what it would do and what kind of, you know, buzz would come about it, but I just don't think sponsors want any part of that. I don't think networks want any part of that today. So I just think it would probably just be met with a ton of resistance.
Yeah, I think that's a shame. Don't you guys feel that that's we should be? Wrestling is about kind of a reflection of society, but it's also about pushing boundaries a bit with the characters and understanding that they are characters. So it's kind of a shame that we can't be more open-minded to having something like that on television.
What, D'Lo, why?
I mean,
I
agree, though. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying I agree with you. I think that, you know, wrestling is what it is, and people understand that it's not real life. It's literally no different than a movie. And I can feel you're going that why does, you know, the movies or TV shows get away with it and there's not that backlash? And I wish I knew the answer to that, because it just doesn't seem fair that we can't do controversial characters like that in wrestling and use them to draw ratings and draw crowds.
Because Sergeant Slaughter.
Yes, go ahead, Eric.
My example, Bruce.
Yep.
No, go ahead, Bruce. I was going to say the same thing. Yeah,
that was controversial.
His big turn.
Yep.
Yeah. He was getting death threats,
even
like that.
Even like the Iron Sheik when he beat Hogan, that was right when Iran was being a pain in America's ass. So it's topical and it's at the moment, and I just don't understand why we can't get away with it today. But, you know, it's just I guess the cool thing is we're creative enough to come up with something different as opposed to, you know, just swimming upstream.
D'Lo, what do you think about Eric Bischoff? You mentioned controversy creates cash. So you had the trio of Eric Bischoff, Paul Heyman, and Bruce Pritchard go back into very prominent and powerful roles in WWE. Do you think that's going to ultimately help the product and the ratings? Ratings have been a little stagnant, and fans, at least on the Internet, are a little unsatisfied about the product. Do you think those three guys will help?
I mean, they're creative enough to help the product. So I think it was a good move on them to bring, you know, Eric and Paul and Bruce all back and try to rekindle some of that magic that Raw and SmackDown has lost over the last few years. I mean, there are wrestling fans out there. They all just didn't disappear. They're still out there. They're just turned off with the product. So you hope that very creative guys like that can right the ship and get it going in the right direction.
What did you learn? So you said you're going to go into talent relations with Impact. What did you learn from your time as an active performer and working with people like Bruce Pritchard and Jim Ross that were in the talent relations spot? What did you learn from them that you can put into practice in your role with Impact Wrestling?
Being patient with talent and you know, listening to them, listening to their input, their feedback, their opinions, because you know, talent aren't just robots. They're individuals who want to have part of the creative process and want to have input in the direction of their character. So not just going, hey, just go do this, but actually listening to them, being patient with them and understanding that they know themselves better than anybody else. So they're their best resource to use.
Yeah, and is it tough to work with talent? So I guess the bigger the star, the more challenging it is to manage that talent and keep them in the direction that you're looking to go with storylines and with the presentation. Is that how it works?
Yeah, to me, as long as you connect with them on a personal level, it's very easy. It's been, for me, very easy to work with talent. And as long as you explain what your vision is and listening to their vision and then finding a happy medium in the middle, then it has been pretty easy. And that's, I like working a collaboratory type of style. I like getting input from them, my input, and then we go create together. And it always seems to work very well. I'm just never the one to go do this because I did this and this is what I did to get over it. That, to me, this never worked.
Yeah. D'Lo, I was wondering, like, talking about, let's talk about today's wrestlers and things. Is there a couple names that just kind of jump out at you, maybe guys that are emerging that you feel are, you know, ready to break through and become superstars? Anybody you got your eye on that you feel like is, you know, ready to make that next step?
Well, I go with the obvious one. Tessa Blanchard is a freaking rock star. Male or female, she is one of the best talent in the industry right now. And she is, she's a megastar waiting to happen. And then, you know, let's see, you know, like, for example, a guy named, you know, Brian Cage, who is just this superhuman looking guy who can go out there and wrestle. Michael Elgin, he brings that Japanese style over here to the States,
right,
and brings it a hard hitting style that most guys don't use over here, which makes him unique. And then you put in the fact that he's a freaking powerhouse. Jesus Christmas. And then, you know, I got my old standby Eddie Edwards, who's just like my workhorse. He's the guy who just can go out there with a broomstick. It doesn't matter, and he'll put on a hell of a match.
With Tessa Blanchard, would you? I don't know if this is a fair comparison because she's actually a better in-ring worker, but is there a touch of China to Tessa Blanchard in the sense that she can actually compete with the men and pull off matches that look competitive against the men? You see that in her at all?
I do see that because she doesn't, like, just like China, she doesn't seem out of place in there with men. Like, you never go, well, that's a good intergender match. You just go, that was a damn good match, and she never looks out of place. So, yeah, she's got that touch of China because China never looked out of place standing across the ring from a guy. So, yeah, I can definitely see that comparison.
So you'd actually choose Tessa Blanchard even over somebody like a Rat Boy?
You know, that's a hard choice, but I'm gonna let Tessa eke that one out by a nose. Rat Boy does have a big ass nose, but I'm gonna let Tessa eke it out by a nose over Rat Boy.
D-Lo, we had some great times at conventions all throughout the years with Rat Boy and you threatening Rat Boy. I think I miss those times a lot. I miss those old days. those are some fun.
I miss threatening Rat Boy too.
Oh boy.
I recall us sitting around a diner having text conversations, basically D-Lo sending us text messages with very funny jokes about Rat Boy as we're sitting there with him right next to us.
With Rat Boy, we're texting about him, and he, unbeknownst to him, he was the butt of the joke.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It's that odd smell of stale cologne, cigarettes, and body odor. It's a mix that you can't find anywhere else in the world.
And I kept trying to find. He kept saying he had a girlfriend. I kept trying to get pictures of her. I don't think she existed. Physically, I don't think she existed. But in his mind, she was definitely real.
He claims to have a girlfriend
boy.
Again.
Oh well, you know, let him have that. Let him have that.
Eric, anybody can get a Pornhub password, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh boy, D-Lo, we kept you for a lot longer than we intended, and I appreciate you spending the time with us. I guess my final question for you is: you were part of the rise of The Rock. The Rock came out of the Nation of Domination. At least that's when his career started to really jump. Did you know that The Rock would be as big as he is today? Not just in wrestling, but did you know that he had legit movie star in him back in those days?
Look, if I'd have known that back in the day, I would have bet money on it, and I'd be a billionaire now because no one – if anyone said they saw The Rock becoming this, they're lying to you. I knew Rock had the work ethic. I knew Rock had the commitment to want to get better. But you can never say, hey, you're going to be one of the biggest draws in this industry's ever seen. And, oh, by the way, you're going to transfer over to Hollywood and become the highest-earning movie actor. And every movie you put out, no matter good, bad, or different, is going to draw, hundreds of millions of dollars. So, no one could see that coming, but I'm glad it landed on him because he worked hard for it the entire time coming up through. So I'm glad for him.
Yeah, it's definitely something that it's amazing to see because, you had Hogan before him. You've had John Cena after him, and nobody's ever been able to do what The Rock has done, crossing over from wrestling into movies. Jesse Ventura obviously tried it as well. So just an amazing career by The Rock, and you were part of that. You were part of the genesis of Dwayne Johnson.
I was there on the
D-Lo,
ground floor, and he took the rocket.
Yeah. D-Lo, you're on Twitter at DLOBrown75, so make sure you go and give
yes,
D-Lo
sir.
A follow. You're coming up. You're doing some work with WWE Network. Is that true on Table for Three?
Yeah, I did a Table for Three. We're sitting around. We're talking about a lot of things, Nation, Ron Simmons, Mark Henry's story. So, yeah, we filmed that a while ago, and it's finally coming out on the network sometime this month.
Awesome. And then I always give people a chance to ask, how do people book you, D-Lo? How do people get you to appear at conventions or indie events?
Just hit me up on my Twitter, at DLOBrown75. I run everything through there, and you can always get me because I'm always on my Twitter.
We used to say go to WrestlingMarks.com, but Eric retired.
See, man, I tried to have not retired, but, he's got to move on in life. He's got to deal with those. He's got to, pay attention to the damn Steelers.
There you go.
Oh
you
boy.
Go. Bears,
Steelers.
Bears are
rivalry
looking good,
right
man.
Here.
Yeah, the Bears are looking good. I can't say anything. Trubisky looks like the real deal, man.
if Trubisky takes that one more step forward, just that one more step that we're looking for, man, the sky is the limit for that team. Because that defense, dude, that defense is plug and play against anybody.
Yeah. I still don't know how they got.
You just have to watch out. Watch out for the double doink.
That, bro, if we man, if we'd had a damn kicker last year, Jesus, don't get me started. Don't get me started. You didn't woke up the beast now. I'm mad about that damn kicker. Boy.
Yeah, I'm an Eagles fan.
You should. Oh, well, you know what? Here's – ready for this? I'm telling you right now. My pick, NFC Championship, Bears-Eagles.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think
NFC Championship game is Bears-Eagles. I have a good feeling Bears-Eagles in the title game this year.
I think that's a pretty
Carson
good bet.
Carson Wentz is going to have a bounce back. Yep.
As long as Carson stays healthy, that team is as good as anybody in the league. He just got to stay healthy. That's it.
That's tough to do in the NFL. That's the name of the game, right?
That's the million-dollar question. You can't plan for health. You can't put that in the books. Go, yeah, we'll be healthy for all 16 weeks. You can't do that in the NFL.
Oh, boy. At D'Lo Brown, I'm sorry. I don't have it in front of me right now. At D'Lo Brown,
at D'Lo 75. Brown at 75.
Yeah, there we go. D'Lo, thanks for hanging out with us. Thank you so much, and always good to talk to you, and we'll see you on the circuit.
Thank you so much,
man. I appreciate it, guys. Talk to you later. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Right.
All right, bye.
D'Lo Brown. Wrestling with history. Eric, you know, it's like we've done these a couple times now. We're starting to get back in the guest track, and because I travel and you got your home studio being redesigned, we don't have the magic of video. So we apologize to the listeners and each other for the not knowing when each other's going to jump in.
Yeah, we're working on it. It definitely is a dynamic that I miss from the radio days. I loved sitting in the studio and seeing each other, but it's definitely – I think we started a system during this particular interview that seems to be a good way to get us going. So, I mean, it was great anyway. I don't – you know, I think it sounded great, man.
Yeah, D'Lo is always fun to talk to. All right, we got some people on the board. We'll get to your calls, and we'll talk factions on the other side. I'm sure Ratboy wants to chime in on what D'Lo had to say about him. 657-383-1666 if you're listening live. And by the way, all of you people that listen to the podcast every week, if you want, check us out live on a Wednesday night, 9:30 Eastern time, and you can call in. We'd love to hear from you. 657-383-1666. Tweet at Bruce VOC or at Wrestling Marks. We'll try to get to your tweets during the show as well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with more. This is Wrestling with History Worldwide in the VOC Nation Radio
Live
Network.
From the In the Room studios, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is Samoa Joe, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The VOC Wrestling Nation worldwide at VOCNation.com. Joey Styles is taking terminology from this show, and he is sending it back to the WWE.
Well, I will make sure when I say worldwide going forward that I include VOC Nation.
Voice of Choice Wrestling Nation.
Heard worldwide.
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 Worldwide, baby.
Worldwide, man.
Worldwide.
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 Worldwide. En el mundo todo.
Worldwide.
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 Worldwide. On VOCNation.com.
This is phenomenal one. AJ South.
Din Bodie. The artist formerly known as Kazan.
This is Eugene.
This is Chris Jericho.
This is Sci-Fi's original vampire, Kevin Thorne.
Hey, guys. This is Serena D.
This is Madison Rae.
This is A-Double Austin Aries. This is the hardcore icon. Incredible.
Hey, this is Olympic gold medalist and TNA superstar, Kurt Angle.
You are listening to In the Room.
The best talk show that you can hear.
Tuesday night, 9, 8 central, VOCNation.com, TheBradyHicks.com. Breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information.
Welcome, WCW Retro.
WCW Retro. WCW Retro.
The Maestro of Wrestling. Relive the memories with us, good, bad, or indifferent, for WCW Retro. We'll have a different topic every show.
WCW Retro.
Right here on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
VOC Nation Radio Network, Wrestling with History Worldwide on VOCNation.com. Erica, lots of great programming on VOC Nation Radio Network, and I always encourage people, or I should encourage people, to listen to all of our shows, but specifically, Brady Hicks does a great job on Tuesdays with In the Room. Some good guests the last couple weeks. He's had Rhino, which had some good coverage on the wrestling dirt sheets. AJ Kirsch from WWE 2K and Tough Enough fame was on there the last couple weeks. Mercedes Martinez was in the room yesterday. So Brady always does a good job. Barry Horowitz was on In the Room. You know, we get guests here that aren't necessarily... Yeah, it's like people that aren't heard from all the time, and I think that's always been the charm of VOC Nation.
Yeah, we try to bring the people some different voices instead of the ones they're used to hearing all the time. Let's hear from some of the people that, you know, don't put themselves out there as much as the other guys. You know, they're on social media, but they're not on there 24/7 making all kinds of statements and trying to get their brand out there. It's, you know. We bring them the real people sometimes, or the ones you don't hear from much.
Yeah. No, I think we do our best to get people that you don't hear from all the time and ask them questions that aren't just, you know, typical shoot interview type questions. Ask questions that don't take them necessarily down the road of pure controversy, but still give, you know, good insight into questions that fans have on your mind. Hopefully you guys feel like that, and we encourage you, wherever you're listening to the show, to rate and review us. Give us a good rating if you feel like we're doing a good job, and tell your friends we're here every Wednesday.
They can give us a bad rating, too. It won't hurt our feelings.
Yeah, but we'd rather have the good ones.
Well, we'd rather have the good ones, but you know how the haters are.
I don't mind the haters. Yeah, I guess we'll deal with you. We'll just give you some shit on the air.
There you go.
Erica, one other show note. So Wednesdays for the last, I think 10 years, the VOC Wrestling Nation has been a staple. That's the show that started at WNJC Philadelphia with, first me, Namar, and Albert, and then Brady joined, and then you joined, and then we moved it to the VOC Nation Radio Network. So the VOC Wrestling Nation will be retired as a show. That will be no longer. And King David Lane's show will be called Wrestling with Problems. Yeah, we thought it was confusing because you and I are back. That was our show for so long. And we didn't want to confuse anybody. We didn't want people thinking that, you know, they search for VOC Wrestling Nation, they hear him, they think we're gone again. It was just easier to change the name of that show and retire it and live with the memories.
Wow. It's kind of cool that it's retired. If there was a VOC Nation Hall of Fame, our banner would be flying up to the rafters now. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So very, very cool. And again, if you haven't checked it out, go to VOCNation.com and check out all of our fine programming. The Maestro from WCW fame, he's got a show. I think it drops every Saturday. It's live. He takes callers as well. Great stuff from him. And just good programming all the way around. 657-383-1666 if you're listening live. I'm going to go to the phones. I talked to Malcolm in California. We talked to D-Lo, who was in Chicago. I'm going to go to the other coast and talk to Rat Boy. What's up, Rat Boy? You're in the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Okay, I got one good question for you, okay? What did D-Lo say about me?
Where were you?
Didn't I tell you?
Well, you got, I was busy watching Big Brother, okay?
Well, he said that you smell like, yeah, Ed Rappel, well, you know what time we start. Why are you late?
Hey, I'm busy watching a TV program at that time. Come on.
That's
you
what
know.
PBR is for, man.
I don't care what Dito says. I tell you what, okay? You can lay a message to me, to Dito, okay? Tell him to put on his boxing gloves. I'm ready for him in the ring, you know, at Celebrity Boxing. I'm ready for him.
Well, you'll be happy to know that he said that you are the second best performer that he's ever come across. So you're only second to Tessa Blanchard. So, you know, here you are challenging him to a fight. He actually said a kind thing about you.
Oh, really? Oh, well, I take it back then. But if he still wants to jump in the ring with me in boxing gloves, smell versus smell, we could do it.
Smell versus smell.
Why boxing gloves? I'm just wondering. I have to ask that. Why boxing gloves? It's wrestling.
It should be boxing, ain't it? Or should it's wrestler versus boxer?
So now you're a boxer?
Yeah, then I used to live in a box.
Oh, boy.
Oh, in a gutter?
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Now I'm in a penthouse suite.
Oh,
I have to save that for the next intro.
Yeah.
Rebel, cool, who's your favorite faction? Who's your favorite faction?
Let me see. There's two of them that I really like. All right. One was Jesse Body Ventura.
What?
Yeah, man. You know, we got bandanas on, you know, and wearing was a nice shiny coat and all, you know.
What is? Did you say something about wardrobe?
Yeah, wardrobe.
Means.
You know.
No. Faction, not fashion. Faction.
Oh, he
stable.
Thinks fashion.
Oh,
I couldn't
forget
fashion,
it. Then.
He thought.
Oh, forget
oh
it.
What's your favorite stable, Rat Boy? That you'd have to listen to the show to understand the topic.
Right, fashion versus
you know,
stable. Whatever you want
to call it. I mean, shooting too much and all. You know, my it's the NWO, of course.
NWO. Eric, number one on the list, NWO.
I don't like that list. I don't
Who's
like
your
list.
Favorite NWO
write,
member?
Then write a new list, Eric, if you don't like it.
I will.
Then put it up and put it up on Facebook so I can see it.
No, you can't see me on Facebook, brother. I make sure of that.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
But you can't see me,
Rat Boy, what else? What else? And then I get back to the topics of today.
NWO, and I had to be the...
No, I'm not asking you for another guess. I wanted to know what else was on your mind.
Oh, what else? SummerSlam, of course.
Okay.
What about...
And I'm just going to shit... There's one match I really want to see, and I hope it happens again. Goldberg against Ziggler, and Goldberg's going to pick another pole, and that's his next opponent, the ring post. What post is going to bang his head into now?
Wow.
Oh, boy. Thank you for the call, Rat Boy. I love you, man. Eric, so first of all, I mean, there's plenty of shows out there that talk about current wrestling and shit on the current product,
yeah.
But we don't do that. We talk about the past as it relates to the future, And there's a lot of shows that Ratboy can call to talk about SummerSlam. I just don't want to be it, that one. I don't want to be that show.
It's too easy. And like you said, it makes you feel like you have to be negative like all the other shows. It's like, and it's more fun to talk about the past than as it relates to the future of the business. I enjoy it a lot more. We're allowed to be positive and enjoy wrestling for, you know, instead of being disgruntled wrestling fans.
I will say this. I don't understand why the WWE, after the terrible performance that Goldberg and The Undertaker put on in Saudi Arabia, why both of those guys were back involved in other matches. I can only think, Eric, that they're doing that because they wanted those guys to have, some way to right the wrong and not go out that way, not have people.
That's all it is, Bruce.
To low notes?
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's that's all it is. I mean, and they picked for Goldberg. They picked who better to pick than Dolph Ziggler. He makes any match a better match by just being in it. As far as like he's gonna make Goldberg's spear look tremendous. He's gonna make the jackhammer look great, and he's gonna get pinned, and Goldberg can look like he did, you know, and he can go off into the sunset the right way, you know, and that's what they're doing. Yeah.
Don't you think that Goldberg would be better off, like his best times in the industry were when he was just doing squash matches or very short matches? I think if they want him to go out on a high note, then just put him in there with somebody he can squash. I hate to see Dolph Ziggler be that guy if that's the direction they're going, but wouldn't you think that they should just put him in a squash match and let him go out on a high note?
Yeah, well, I think that's what they're doing. And it's Dolph Ziggler's going to be the sacrificial lamb. I mean,
target.
They've been running an angle where him and The Miz were clearly going to fight each other. And then they started this thing where he's making fun of, you know, putting down, you know, past wrestlers. And it's like they got desperate at the last second and said, let's bring in Goldberg. I mean, you know, not one of my favorite things, but it's just because they want to give the guy a chance to go out on a higher note than what he's that match with The Undertaker was.
And I think the fans are going to boo the hell out of Goldberg. I don't think people care about him. I think that WWE fans never actually did care about him. They might have cheered him the first, you know, one or two times he came out, you know, 20 years ago, however long it's been. But, yeah, he's not a guy that's ever been over with that crowd. I don't know why they're going back to the well.
Yeah, and what they're paying him, from what I understand, is a tremendous amount of money. So that's what makes it all the more interesting. I mean, they're bringing him back to sell tickets, but I don't know if he's going to sell tickets.
Yeah. Interesting. We don't run the business, though, you know? I'm sure that people that are a lot smarter than us, that make a lot more money, and have to make those decisions. So we'll let them make them. We'll concentrate on faction, Derek. So,
okay.
You know, Malcolm mentioned the Horsemen. They're number three on the list, NWO number one. And I'll say this. In terms of just when I think of a faction in wrestling, my mind goes to the Horsemen because I think they were one of the first prominent ones. Before the Horsemen, you had, I guess, the Legion of Doom back in, was it Mid-South or one of the territories, you know, the Road Warriors, Jake Roberts, I think. There was a bunch of people that comprised the Legion of Doom. You had Devastation Incorporated and World Class. But the Horsemen is what I think of when I think of a faction. I think some of the people that went through the Horsemen over the years watered it down a little bit from the original group of Arn, Ole, Tully, and Ric Flair. But, you know, Eric, when I think about a group that transcended the business, changed the business, and totally, you know, marched us into a new era, I have to think that the NWO is the most – they've made the biggest impact, no pun intended, on the business. So I could – I know you don't like the NWO as number one, but I think I can see it there. I think that they definitely set the business in a different direction and one of the most profitable directions that the business has ever seen.
without a doubt, one of the most impactful, you know, factions to ever be created. I think my problem, much like you said, sort of with the Horsemen, if you look at the entire history, it's hard to ignore some of the names that were throwing up the four fingers at one point or time during the history of the Four Horsemen. So if I just think about the NWO when it's the original three guys, and maybe with Eric Bischoff too, but I just feel like once you got to, you know, NWO Wolfpack and guys like Scott Norton and Disco Inferno and guys like that putting on the NWO shirt, it wasn't the same. So the impact was there, and I appreciate it, and I like it, but I just think long-term, I just think more of it as being bad than good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally track with you there. I think the original NWO of Hall, Nash, Sean Waltman, Hulk Hogan, and Eric Bischoff, if you take those core people, that is the group that transcended the business. That's the group that changed the business forever. I think that, you know, Scott Norton, Buff Bagwell, those were guys that they just needed as workers to have matches if they were going to continue to grow that concept.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess, Eric, you could say the same thing about, I mean, the Horsemen had Steve Mongo McMichael.
Oh, they had. Absolutely.
Kurt Hennig, Barry Windham, Sid Vicious.
Oh, Barry Windham was a good one. Lex Luger was all right. But they had, like, Sid was at one time before Horsemen. Like, Mongo's got to be the worst of all. There's one guy Paul Roma. That's the name I was looking for. Paul Roma was a Four Horseman.
Yeah, from the Young Stallions to the Four Horsemen.
Yeah. They definitely had some bad, you know, reboots of the Four Horsemen, which I think in hindsight they probably regret doing, but it was such a moneymaker at one point in time. It was hard not to go back to it whenever you felt the need to you know, bring something back to the business. It's hard not to go to it, but I don't know. Like,
now,
it just got watered down.
You know, and I'll try to, if we get some more calls, I'll try to work in some other guests on this list. But I'm going to start back at the top, and we'll go through the list of factions. But I want to jump to Evolution for a second, because to me, you know, Vince McMahon has a long-standing habit of changing people's names when they come into the WWF, so he owns the name, he can own the gimmick, and he can invest and, you know, make that his own. And I feel like Evolution was his way of remaking the Horsemen without calling it the Four Horsemen, so that it would be his creation, don't you think?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It was definitely his version of the Four Horsemen. Absolutely. No doubt. You had your veteran guys and your young guys that they were trying to get over. And, you know, it was totally, they wore the suits. They same sort of limousine and all that. It was definitely the Four Horsemen, without a doubt. I think that was Vince McMahon's way of saying, see, I can do the Four Horsemen too. Absolutely. Totally agree with that.
Yeah. And it was very entertaining. I think those guys, they were true heels. And that's, we talked about this on one of the earlier shows. One of the things wrestling is missing today is a true heel that is very good at being a heel that everybody hates. And I think the only person that really comes close to that is Baron Corbin. And I don't think people hate him as a heel as much as they just don't like him as a performer. And I think there's a big difference.
I agree. I'd say the closest to actually being the heel, though, would be Shane McMahon right now.
Yeah.
He's a better in-ring performer.
And is that where
Baron
you
want to Corbin.
Be?
No, I mean, he's not the guy you want to have being your best heel. Absolutely not. I mean, it'd be good if he was the best heel and he was helping Drew McIntyre and Elias get over, but it feels like he's not. It's just Shane McMahon still kind of holding those guys back, and I, you know, But I agree with you. There's nobody. The evolution was they were cocky. They were arrogant without even saying anything. They just had a presence when they would come into the ring that just it was an arrogance that you don't really – some people have to work for and can't even get. You know, like a heel tries to become arrogant and they don't really pull it off. Randy Orton and Triple H and Ric Flair and Batista, they just pull it off by walking into the ring. They had it. And it was a great group of guys. I mean, think of all the championship titles that group has had. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Great, great job by the WWF and WWE back at the time of recreating the Horsemen under their own brand, their own banner. And I think we miss groups like that because some of those heel groups, the Horsemen, the NWO, the Evolution, they're the ones that got the big baby faces over. And we'll go through the rest of this list and you'll see. The big thing about any of these factions, most of these factions, is there was a baby face on the other side that became larger than life because the faction was able to get that baby face over and create some momentum behind it.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, too? You know what really makes I'm thinking about, like, great factions are the ones that could stay heel the whole time if they were together. Evolution never turned baby face. They may have, you know, turned one of their guys' baby face by taking him down. That's one thing. But, I mean, you look at the Evolution, NWO was over. They were – even when they were the – that's when the bad guys became the good guys sort of thing. That's when that started with them. And, you know, you think about DX, as great as DX was. DX was loved even when they were supposed to be the top heels. They were still if they were out there with The Rock and Austin, it was tough to say who the biggest thing was on the show. Was it DX? Was it Rock or Austin? I mean, they were all right there, you know. So to stay heel the whole time like Evolution did or like the Four Horsemen did, that's, you know, that's impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you had – the four people that were in that group were just, they were all, I guess maybe not Ric Flair, but three of the four were at the top of their game. And even Ric Flair at 53 or 55 years old could still go when he needed to. So that was another rare element of Evolution. It was just a great group and probably doesn't get enough credit as much as it should for being a very great faction.
Yeah, they were. I'd be interested to know how long it actually lasted, the original with all four of them together. Because remember, they did do the angle where the three of them returned when Rick was no longer wrestling. You know, but when that original group formed, it's interesting to know how long they were around because it doesn't seem like they kept them together for too long. It was more because I guess they broke apart when they got rid of Randy Orton, right? Randy Orton won the title. And Triple H gave the thumbs down when he was on Batista. Yeah.
Yep. 2003, and it ended in October of 2005, officially.
Okay. Right. That's a short-lived faction, really, if you think about it. I mean.
Yeah, but very impactful. I mean, compare that to the Horsemen.
Absolutely.
They were 86 to 99. But you know, honestly, you think about the NWO, people think about them as longstanding, but it was really just 97 to 2000. I mean, and really by 2000, it was just remnants.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely.
And don't even get me started on the WWE version.
Ah. We pretend that doesn't exist, don't we?
Yeah, I think they do too.
Yeah.
All right, number 10 on the list, the Corporation. So the Corporation led by WWE Chairman Vince McMahon, they controlled the WWE for the most of 1998, or the latter part of 98 and early 1999, and it was a group that was on the other side of DX and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So at its height, the Corporation had Vince and Shane, they had The Rock, the Big Boss Man, Ken Shamrock, and Test, And then you had the Stooges, Sergeant Slaughter, Gerald Briscoe, Pat Patterson. Number 10 on the list. You think it deserves to be higher?
I'm not going to say yet, depending on who's the other, who's in front of them. I wasn't a huge fan of that faction personally. I mean, I get what the purpose of it was, you know, to be the heels for DX and for Austin. But if you just look at it really like across the board, as far as the talent, Test was okay. Big Boss Man by that time was, you know, Big Boss Man's best days were, you know, in the 80s wrestling Hogan. You know, so it's not really what I consider like a great group. And obviously it was just to propel The Rock to another level by being with them. So it did what it was supposed to do, but I wasn't a huge fan of that group.
All right, number 9 was this is a faction I thought had more in it, and they kind of went in a direction. I think they killed it off by just making it a little less edgy than it should have been. But the Nexus, they came in 2010 when that whole Daniel Bryan choked John Cena with the tie incident, mm-hmm. and they suspended or actually fired him, right? Daniel Bryan was fired and came back eventually.
Fired.
But yeah, I mean, they started off with a big bang and they kind of fizzled and they just went with Wade Barrett as a single star for a while. But I thought the Nexus, I liked the concept of them coming in from NXT and trying to, you know, get on the WWE main event or main roster and try to take control of the programming. I think that they kind of weakened that faction over time, and they had them losing consistently, and eventually it fizzled.
Yeah, I think what was hard with that group was you start out on such a big debut. I mean, remember that when they jumped John Cena and I mean, that the crowd was dead silent just watching these guys who they didn't really know. You know, most fans didn't really know exactly who those guys were, and they're beating up John Cena, tearing the ring apart and everything. It was a moment. It was, I still remember that. It was a really, you know, a great moment in wrestling. But I agree with you. I don't think they didn't have enough talent in the group to really propel it to where it should have gone or could have gone. I don't think they had guys who were ready to be on the WWE roster yet. They weren't ready. So Wade Barrett was the only one who they let speak. And then the other guys, you know, they kind of, you realize not all of them had enough talent to even be out there. I mean, like, Antonio Tarver, he couldn't wrestle yet, and he was out there. And Husky Harris, a.k.a. Bray Wyatt, was part of that group. And
Bray Wyatt,
so guys broke out and made it on their own after that group. So, I mean, if you look at talent-wise, I mean, Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt, Ryback, Heath Slater in his own right has done, you know, had a nice career. So they had guys who made it, but I just don't think they were ready. But it was a great concept that I agree with you that just didn't go where it maybe could have just because of, I think, lack of talent at the time. They just weren't ready.
Yeah, so I guess I'm probably with you that they were all a little bit green at the time, but I just felt like if they had kept it, if they kept them coming out in short bursts, kind of like the NWO did, and they mm-hmm. let them just be badass and not, you know, I think that WWE sometimes they try to turn it into, you know, quote unquote matches too early. And they try to, you know, they start getting wins and losses involved. And when you have a group that is trying to be dominant and then you put them in a regular match and they lose in a you know, regular pinfall 1-2-3 fashion, it just weakens the tone that group is trying to set.
Oh, it changes everything. I totally agree. And I think that's exactly what happened with them. Like you're saying, maybe just have them constantly coming out, you know, have them constantly being a pain to John Cena if they wanted to at the time. Something to – but leave them in a group, have them the group pack mentality attacking it, especially, you know, you're supposed to, what do they say? You're supposed to accentuate the positive and hide the negatives. Well, you're not really hiding the negatives
right.
if you're putting some of those guys who are obviously very green in matches right away.
Sure. And that's where I think the WWE went wrong. And they should
yeah.
have had Wade Barrett as the main performer and made him dominant and then had the other guys just come in and attack. And maybe, you know, I also think it was silly for them to get rid of Daniel Bryan for choking somebody with a tie. I think that's silly.
Yeah, that was – yeah, I wonder how true – that's one of those things we've heard about and nobody's really disputed it, but I wonder how true that all is. I wonder if there was – I from what I understood, Vince McMahon didn't like Daniel Bryan. That's just, you know, he just didn't see anything in him as far as a talent. And I don't think, you know, I think that was all pretty much a shoot that they brought to reality and, you know, with his character. And it's kind of what got him over was the fact that the boss didn't really like him. I think that was all real, you know, to some degree. Hmm. So maybe they just made an example of him, you know, say, hey, do this, you know. Plus it was John Cena too at the time who was his top guy, so
yeah. Number 8, the Nation of Domination. So Nation of Domination were formed when Savio Vega, Crush, and D'Lo Brown joined forces with Farouk, and you had the militant Nation of Domination. We talked about it with D'Lo earlier today, that this group might not work in today's political climate.
No, and I still think that's a shame that we're in such a political climate that we can't have over the top characters, and that's what people forget. Why? Like D'Lo brought up a good point. You can do it in a movie, you can do it on a television show, but if for some reason you do it in wrestling, it becomes you're overstepping your bounds. It becomes like it's offending people. Why? And I don't know why that is. But it was a good point that he brought up.
Well, and I think to tone it down a little bit, do you remember they had Owen Hart join the Nation in
yeah.
the following month?
Yeah.
Once it got going.
Yeah.
So it made it not necessarily a racial thing. It was more just a faction at that point. But you know, controversial at the time, and probably would be very much controversial today. But definitely a group that stands out. I think to me, and the reason that they're not higher than 8 is they lost a lot of matches. I mean, Farouk was the leader of the group, and he, if I remember it right, he lost more than he won in the ring when it came down to a match.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that was partially because they had always planned on that being The Rock's reason for taking Farouk out and becoming the new leader of the Nation was because he wasn't winning. You know, I don't know if that's possibly they were thinking that long term. But, yeah, it was a good group, though. They used to attack in group as a group. They used to fight as a group. That's what I liked about them. You know, they had the Los Boricuas they were against. They were against DOA. I think they even fought DX. I could be wrong.
That was the time when you had all kinds of groups in the WWF,
yeah.
WWE, and DX was definitely one of them. That was the DX that had Triple H, the New Age Outlaws. I think it was that version of DX.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
post Shawn
yeah.
Michaels.
Yeah, definitely post Shawn
number
Michaels
seven,
for sure.
Number 7 was the Attitude Era version of the Hart Foundation. So the Hart Foundation in 1987 was not really a faction. It was just a tag team managed by Jimmy Hart. And Danny Davis was an extension of that group. But
yeah.
when they reformed in 1997, you had Bret Hart, Neidhart, Owen Hart, the British Bulldog, and the late Brian Pillman.
Great group. They were that was a group that just made so much sense. It was it seemed so natural to put them together. Nothing about it seemed forced. You know, sometimes we see groups form and you kind of go, they're just putting these guys together because they don't know what to do with them. Great group. It helped Brett become a heel, I think, by having Owen, who was much better as a heel than Brett was, and Brian Pillman. People seem to just really believe that he was crazy. So it all of that really helped Bret Hart, and it was great for that time, you know, to go to war against Austin and some of the other guys. I liked them a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, that kind of spawned the Attitude Era. So obviously when Bret left, you had the Montreal Screwjob and Vince McMahon became the heel. I mean, that group was, you know, part of the controversy that led up to all of that happening. If you remember, they had the whole USA versus
yep.
Canada stuff going on. Brian
yep.
Pillman and Steve Austin with the gun incident on the USA Network. I mean,
yeah.
lots of
yes.
edgy stuff by the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, and it's funny because when you look at that group, the British Bulldog was such a up until that point, he was always such a I don't want to say regal character, but that's how I always felt about him. He was just a baby face. No matter what he tried to do, it just never seemed to be he could be anything else but a baby face for some reason. But when he got with the Hart Foundation, he actually, for the first time in his career, seemed like a legitimate heel. And, you know, they had a lot of good wars, like you said, that propelled what became, you know, the Montreal Screwjob. And from there, the rest is history, man. It is pretty cool to think about that group going, you know, and the impact they have.
You know, you talk about the British Bulldog and how you see him as a baby face. It still shocks me to this day to hear some of the stories of drug abuse that happened with the British Bulldog, with Davey Boy Smith. I just, when
yeah.
you look at him as a performer, he looks like such a nice guy, and you just don't see that. You don't see that being part of him, but there's a lot of demons that people have or skeletons in people's closets.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who I genuinely feel like, I mean, I never met him, you know, we could ask Malcolm about him, I'm sure. I just feel like he seemed like a really nice guy and really good guy. And so anytime they tried to make him bad, it just, I don't know. He did everything with a smile, it seemed like.
Oh, Eric, I'll make it happen. Hey,
yeah.
Malcolm, you ever meet the British Bulldog?
No, but Bruce, I know I'm going to see his son, Harry Smith, on the 16th, and I'm good friends with Harry. He told me a lot about his dad. You know, Bruce, he signed autographs where Davey Boy's picture is, like, with Piper, Virgil, and the Bret the Hitman Hart. And the only one that didn't sign was Davey Boy Smith, so Harry signed it for me, you know, a picture from Survivor Series 1991. You know, I told Harry that I used to go to the Yarko Arena, you know, in 88 when the Bulldogs had a feud with the Islanders over Matilda, and I went to one event at the Yarko Arena, and I was holding up this big British flag, and Davey Boy and Dynamite fist bumped me going to the ring. I was right against the rail, you know, so. But I never got to meet the British Bulldogs, but I wish I could have, because I think that was my all-time favorite tag team of anybody. I just love those guys together.
There you go. Thank you, Malcolm. I appreciate that. There you
yeah.
go, Eric. I got that question answered for you right away.
We don't waste time here in the VOC Nation.
Yeah, he hangs out. He likes to listen on the phone instead of on the computer, and we're okay with that. It's not a toll-free number anymore. That's one of the reasons. You know what the toll-free bills used to be back in the day?
No.
Yeah, it was a lot of money. Number six. talking about $1,000-plus toll-free bills for the network.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's not like – I mean, we ran one show a day, one live show a day.
Yeah.
So go figure. The Heenan family, number six. See, to me – I didn't consider as a kid the Heenan family a stable, because they didn't really – it's not like today where a stable, they all have each other's back and they work as a unit. The Heenan family, they almost never were seen together on TV.
No, the only time – when Survivor Series, they would you know, team up together. But you're right. Never really saw them together any other time other than that. That's why I was, when we were talking about this show, I was kind of thinking to myself, do I feel like managers and their stables is different than a faction? And I think I do, for that very reason that you just brought up, that they, most of the time managers and their stables, you never saw that stable working together unless, like I said, Survivor Series was about the only time they ever did that.
Right. Yeah, that was really the only time when the Heenan family worked together was at the Survivor Series. Good point. Number five, as we get towards the end of the show here, the Ministry of Darkness, and they eventually merged with the corporation and became the corporate ministry. Now, it is known for one major angle, and that's when Stephanie McMahon was crucified live on TV by The Undertaker.
Yeah, that was that. Can you imagine? That's another thing. They wouldn't even dare in today's society to even that idea wouldn't even come out of someone's mouth. That's how different things are now. I can't even imagine. Can you even imagine someone trying to pull that off now?
I could see someone saying, "Hey, yeah, bro, we're going to crucify Stephanie on TV."
I can't
okay,
even imagine.
Okay, bro.
I can't imagine. I was not a fan of the Ministry. I thought that was not a big fan. I wouldn't have even put them in the top 10.
Yeah, it was a interesting group, though, because, you know, Edge and Gangrel and then Christian, I guess, at some point came to the group. You had The Undertaker was in there. I just remember Midian losing a lot of matches as a part of the corporate
right.
ministry.
And
the Acolytes, Farouk and Bradshaw.
The Acolytes, yep. they were probably the best thing that came out of that group was the Acolytes, you know, and then the APA. Turning into the APA, that was probably
right.
the best thing that came from that formation of that group.
We talked about Evolution as number four. We talked about the Four Horsemen as number three. Number two, Eric, this is no surprise. It was really the only one that hasn't been talked about yet. D-Generation X. And to me, so I wasn't as big of a fan of the original DX, the Shawn Michaels and Triple H group. China, I guess, and Rick Rude were part of the group as well. But, I mean, DX to me, the main DX was with the New Age Outlaws when Shawn Michaels had left. That was the entertaining DX, the invasion of WCW, like the original DX with Michaels, and then when Michaels came back and him and Triple H were running around, you know, what was it, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That wasn't entertaining to me. I thought that was just juvenile junk.
Yeah, that was just being able to market, you know, that brand again and sell, you know, merchandise and stuff like that. I agree with you. When I think of DX, I do think of Shawn Michaels, but I mostly think of that group of, you know, the New Age Outlaws, China, Triple H, and X-Pac. I mean, that was they were. I thought they were fantastic. If you were asking me who my favorite group, that would be my favorite faction of all time. Would be that DX group. I thought they were great.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And that invasion of WCW was it was an imprint on my childhood, my late teens. I know you're a little bit older than me, but that was just gold. To me, when I watched that on TV and I couldn't believe it was happening, that was just something you never thought you'd see on TV. These two major promotions truly at war with each other.
And the way they made it so entertaining was, you know, that could have been a great idea that could have fallen really flat if the talent didn't do it the right way. You know what I mean? It could have been, but they were able to make that funny, entertaining, and all the while seem very real, where you're like, they're really going to end up on WCW TV. I mean, it you felt like that was going to happen. That was a great moment in wrestling, without a doubt. That was definitely a great time.
Every wrestling fan in the world plays this through their head of what would happen if they had made it through the door, what actually would have happened. And nobody will ever know, because you hear the people that said that they were ready on the other side to beat them down. But then you hear other people say, well, you know, they were friends. And Brian Armstrong had his brother working in WCW at the time. Eric Bischoff says it would have been great TV if they had made it in. He would have let them in. But nobody will really ever know what would have happened. And we can only dream. We can only ponder.
Yeah, you think about it now. It would have been brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant of WCW to have actually allowed them in. It really would have been. I think that would have altered wrestling forever. I don't even know what to expect would have happened, but if they had just let them in, I don't even know if those guys would have known what to do. It would have been really interesting to see. Like you said, we can all speculate on it, and it's not, you know, but it's a fascinating thing to talk about or think about. It's like, what if they had let them in?
Yeah. And we'll do tag teams next week, but my favorite tag team of all time was the New Age Outlaws, and I still love hearing Road Dogg give that, "Oh, you didn't know?" intro when he comes down to the ring. That's just amazing. That's gold.
Bruce, we're on the same page with this. I absolutely still to this day absolutely love when he does that. It is fantastic. It's still it was brilliant. You think about it. They didn't have a finisher as a tag team. They were so unique as a tag. I don't want to, you know, like you said, we'll talk about tag teams next week, but I'm with you on that. They were fantastic. I thought all of DX, the entrances and everything about them was so unique. And I don't think anybody's really captured that again, the way they had that sort of special connection with the crowd and their entrance. You know, it was as much about the crowd as anything with their entrance. And that was really unique and cool.
Yeah, that's something that if we compare it to today, there's nobody that really does that. I guess you have – there's some people that have, like, I want to call him Kate Quick, Ron Killings, the R-Truth, you know, plays with the crowd
yeah.
when he comes down. But it's just not the same. It's not it's corny. Like, the New Age Outlaws weren't corny.
No. They were fantastic. I'm with you 1,000% on the New Age Outlaws, man. I have friends who – tell me they were terrible and this and that. I'm like, they were so entertaining. They were just over the top, but in the best ways, you know. And that's how I felt. That's how I actually felt about DX in general. They were just completely over the top, but they did it in the best possible ways. That's why I felt they were my favorite group.
Yeah. Besides and I think this might even predate DX, so I should save it for the tag team episode, but. Besides the invasion of WCW, one of my favorite moments in wrestling is Jim Ross when Mick Foley and Terry Funk were in the dumpster and the Outlaws pushed them off the stage. Jim Ross
yes.
going, "There's people in there. My God, there's people in there."
Absolutely. That's so funny. That's a great moment. See, you're
awesome
more of an Attitude
stuff.
Era fan than you realize, Bruce.
Well, I mean, that was coming home from school, you know, I was in high school back then, in college, and just coming home, and I looked forward to Monday nights very, very much, and it was a good run. It was a good run, but when I think about classic wrestling and just what I really loved to watch on TV, and I still like to go back and watch it on the WWE Network, I think of the 80s stuff. So It's a mix, Eric. It's a mix.
Yeah. It's a good mix. I'm the same way. Raw was appointment television for me in the Attitude Era. I mean, that was, you know, believe it or not, that was set your VCRs just in case you weren't going to be home kind of thing. But, you know, it was a good time, definitely. I have a quick question. I know we're about to go off the air. Do you have any factions that you like today?
Oh, boy. You know, Eric, I have to say this, and this is the reason that I agreed to come back and do this show again, because I agreed to do this show in this format because I'm not a big – I don't watch every week like I used to back in the day, and it's hard to do that. I think if I could think about it a little while, I probably should have been prepared to say
no,
this, but
that was just off the – I was, you know.
How about you?
Me, for sure. And it's not in the WWE. It's actually in NXT. It'd be Undisputed Era. I think they're fantastic, and I'd love to see them. They'll get ruined when they get called up to the WWE as a group, but for now they're the best, I think, in the business.
Well, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about, I had a long flight from Philly to Denver today, and I was thinking about a potential faction. I was reading the current news as we were preparing for the show, and I saw Roman Reigns apologize to Samoa Joe for accusing him. I thought, wouldn't it be cool if the new creative leadership made a faction out of the Samoans, and they just made them dominant? You have the Usos. Yep, you have Samoa Joe, Roman Reigns. I think then fans would get behind Roman Reigns more than they are today, or they would. He could be a monster heel. You could take him in either direction.
I love that idea. Book it. I know Vince used to listen to us, you know, and take our ideas. So if Vince comes back and listens to this, Vince, put that group together, man.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see if that happens. But I would love to see that. So there's my answer. The faction of today that I would like to see is the Samoan faction. Eric, some housekeeping real quick. VOC Nation Wrestling with History. I can't talk. It's been a long day. My brain's not working. I'm not on my game today, so I apologize to everybody listening. VOC Nation Wrestling with History, brought to you by The Gathering. The Gathering taking place on August 15th through the 18th at the Hilton Charlotte University in Charlotte, North Carolina. Go to teamartpromotions.com. Today's the last day, remember, to get your tickets to that dinner. That'll be hosted by Ken Resnick, who did a fantastic job on the show a couple weeks ago, actually last week, plugging The Gathering. So, yeah. Great interview by Ken Resnick, and make sure you go back and listen if you haven't heard that already. But go to teamartpromotions.com and get your tickets and information for The Gathering. Eric, I wish I did conventions again because I would go to this one.
Yeah, I don't wish I do conventions, but I would go to that one. I definitely don't miss that part of the job. Much like you're saying you're not watching the current programs as much, I'm kind of happy to not be at the conventions anymore, but I definitely, that's one to go to if I were going to go to one. I mean, it's classics, a lot of good guys.
Eric, we're over time. I had a call on the board I never got to because I was looking at the rankings of the stables. Do you mind if we sneak in a quick call so that I can satisfy this person?
Yeah, go for it, man.
We're over time. Give a little bonus coverage. Patty, I'm not going to go off the air without talking
Hi.
To you. What's up, Patty?
It's okay. I was late getting on anyway, so it's nothing.
What's
I missed
your favorite
last
faction
week's
of all
show.
Time?
Yeah.
You,
my
we
what?
Missed you, Patty, last week. We missed you last
yeah,
week.
I was
we
in,
had Ken Resnick
I was,
on.
I was in the middle of moving.
Oh, hopefully you moved to a nice place.
I didn't get to get in on the show like I had planned on it because my son showed up and I was having to get off and, you know, help get my stuff out of where I was living. So I missed the show completely and I thought, dang, of all things. To miss it.
Well, we love hearing from you, Patty. We love hearing from you. What's your favorite faction? We're going to go off the air in a couple minutes, so I have to make it short. What's your favorite faction?
Yeah. My favorite tag team?
Faction. Tag teams are next week. Faction. So stable or faction. What's your favorite one?
Faction. My favorite faction. Really don't have a favorite fashion, but I always liked the what they used to call bell bottoms.
No.
I'm
not
joking
fashion.
With you. I'm joking with you.
Oh, Patty.
But I don't have one.
All right.
Man, I kind of like a lot of them, so I don't have no favorite one.
Okay. All right, Patty,
that's
we love hearing
bad.
From you. We're going to go off the air, so we'll talk to you
yeah.
next week. Make sure you go back and listen to the podcast
sure
and check out what you missed. All right,
yeah.
love you to death. Eric, that's a wrap. We got two people that heard fashion instead of faction. Go figure.
And two people who it wouldn't surprise me would think that.
This has been VOC Nation Wrestling with History. Listen, we love each and every one of you. Find this broadcast if you're listening live. Find our podcast. Go back and listen to the stuff you missed. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever your favorite podcasts are housed. We're there. Rate and review. We love to hear from you. Tweet us at Bruce VOC, at Wrestling Marks, or tweet the network at VOC Nation. Tag teams next week, Eric, right here live on VOCNation.com.
Worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Joey Stubbs. What's going on, Joey?
You know, for somebody who makes his living on radio, you have a hard time stringing together words. You all right?
I was trying to make a point. I'm using football as a soliloquy.
You know, you really have a way with words.
Rat Boy didn't even want to call in last week since you weren't here, so.
And the very first person that was ever in the ring was an amateur, is Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman was not an NCAA champion.
Oh, my God.
I am heartbroken. I don't know why you're laughing.
Albert, you're a freeloader.
It's buzz around the world. Twitter blew up. Facebook blew up.
It's the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. What's going on, Jimmy?
Well, you never know. Telephone, telegraph, and tell the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, we're full of all kind of surprises.
This is a honky-tonk man, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time in the WWE, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
You know why you don't want me on your radio show? Because you know the ratings will go through the roof. You'd make a lot of money, and that way you keep me off. That way you will stay always broken.